We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Dan McNeil, Danny Parkins.
Oh, here we go!
Afternoons on The Score.
Anthony Rizzo tweeting, "Hey, at Reds, when do you think the window is? Asking for some friends. Maybe check at Home Depot for one."
Actually, pretty nice little Saturday. We're going to go to Home Depot. Maybe Bed Bath & Beyond. I don't know. I don't know if we'll have enough time.
It's just a screenshot of the greater Cincinnati area covered in orange and red meteorology.
Yeah, I was very happy to see Muncie, Indiana, where I went to college on that radar shot.
Ball State University. The home of Mitch Rosen's son, Ben.
We sent it to Cincinnati for Cubs pregame, and they give it back to us because it's just pouring rain.
And it was pouring in Milwaukee.
And it doesn't look like it's letting up. Everybody is wondering what the hell are the Reds doing holding on to this thing for, because most maps show that area being covered in precipitation until 11 o'clock tonight.
It's a deluge. Mac, I think that's what a meteorologist would say. Just a constant drought of rain all times. Anthony Rizzo.
A drought of rain.
Wait, what?
A drought of rain.
Here we go. So glad we came back on.
Oh, this is the good stuff. This is what they line up for.
Are we going to bring that back? Right?
Let's freeze it right about now. Go ahead and roll it.
Say just a constant drought of rain all times.
Well, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. What was wrong?
What was I looking for there instead of drought? An onslaught of rain?
That would work.
An avalanche of rain? Rain doesn't avalanche. What does rain do when it pours?
Bet you they line up to hear this one.
They said every life some rain must fall. Well, I've had some hurricanes descend in my life, but...
Just a constant drought of rain.
Dumbass.
Yo! Saddle up! Lock and load!
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
Downpour. Now it hit me. I just had to hear it back and relive my nightmares. A downpour of rain. That would have worked.
Yeah, that would have been fine. Use that next time instead of deluge or drought of rain, constant drought of rain. How are you today, Danny? Everything good in your world?
Sure. Yes, absolutely. Everything's fine. Is that convincing?
That'll do it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Deluge would work, by the way, to inundate with a great quantity of something. Deluge as a
deluge,
noun.
Deluge, yeah.
I think it's... Deluge?
Deluge.
Deluge?
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
That's what Jordan visited when he was in Paris. Deluge.
That's exactly right.
I went to see Deluge. I eat the pizza.
I'm fine. How are you, Mac?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing very well. I'm glad we're going to have baseball tonight for both of our local teams. We keep dodging bullets here. Sooner or later, the Cubs and or the White Sox will be parked for a night, but it's just the Brewers and Cardinals who get parked tonight. Six teams now spectating for the start of the second weekend of baseball 2020.
Yeah, we had a hockey playoff start tomorrow. We had the NBA regular season come back last night. We had some hockey exhibitions. We had no Chicago baseball, but of course there's virus news, which sucks, but there still is enough sports swirling around, and there's an insane amount of games scheduled this weekend with basketball and hockey and baseball all back, in addition to, you know, golf and the, and fights and races and all of that, that, like, even though sports are getting canceled and baseball and college football and NFL is having some trouble here, like, there is plenty of sports to distract you from the reality that the virus is still here.
Yeah, there is. And I'm glad it's White Sox in Kansas City tonight. The White Sox are going to get a look at a pitcher who has never thrown against anything higher than Class A competition. And so hopefully the White Sox can breathe a little easier in a series against the Kansas City Royals, who have yet to – they're cutting the ribbon tonight on their home schedule. The Royals, all of their first seven games of the year have been on the road, so they're at Kauffman Stadium tonight. So I like the White Sox with Dallas Keuchel, who was pretty good, went 5 2/3, allowed just two runs last Saturday in the White Sox first win of the season, that coming against the Twins, while the Cubs get the Pirates. And on Monday's show, we will get to know a little bit about the new Pirates television broadcast team, because we've enjoyed that the first two summers we've been together.
Yeah, indeed.
And they've had some changes in the booth. The ageless Steve Blass finally has stepped aside, and we have fresh meat in the Pirates booth. I wonder if it's going to be every bit as uncool as the last bunch of Pirates broadcasters. But
all the jewelry and all the stuff.
All the jewelry. Yeah, one of the guys who actually told us last year that he thought jewelry weighed guys down when they're rounding the bases. It slows them down.
That was wild.
That is wild and pretty cool.
That's you. You kids today. Kid, that the tattoos and the jewelry, it'll slow you down when you're rounding the bases.
The tattoos also slow them down. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
That,
wow. What an outside-the-box thought that is. Well, Tanny, how excited are you to spend some time with Pirates TV over the weekend?
Oh, what's this now? I'm not really excited about that. Yeah. I haven't looked yet to see who it is, like to see who they replaced old Blassie with. Is it Bob Walk? I'm speculating here because he was on their radio team and he often did analyst work on television. So I'm guessing it's Bob Walk. And if that's the case, it'll be, not an entirely different broadcast. So looking forward to that.
Bob Walk is a youth movement. He's 63.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's good. You got to keep up with the median age of a World Series viewer for baseball. So that's perfect.
Well, yeah, until I get the Marquee app to acknowledge Xfinity that, you know, I can't watch the Cubs anyway. So, yeah, I'm your Sox guy. So, yeah, you guys can enjoy the Pirates TV.
Perfect. I'm looking forward to the full report on Monday's show. So, yeah, we got a ton of sports this weekend, and it's a little concerning that the virus has made its way to the Central Division, right? Because of how scheduling is, you only play teams in your geographic region. The East plays the East, Central plays the Central, West plays the West. But now that a couple of Cardinals have tested positive, they're being very proactive and postponing the game against the Brewers. What I find interesting, and this isn't even like complaining or fear about the virus or anything, it's just a, in terms of the logistical hurdles of trying to deliver baseball to sports fans, I find it interesting that it seems to be, from the reports that I read, an acknowledgement that Brewers Cardinals would have been played tonight if not for the outbreak from the Marlins, which is just weird because the Marlins had a couple of positive tests and then voted to play the game and then played the game and then they ballooned to about 20 positive tests throughout their, you know, coaching staff and roster. And I say all of that to say this, that means that the 113-page protocol meant nothing and they're making up these rules as they go, right? That's an odd thing that somehow these positive tests would not have tripped some sort of mechanism that would have shut the game down until the Marlins had this widespread outbreak that they had.
Yeah, the 113 pages of recommendations, certainly not
right.
Rules, baseball players all were supposed to read, wasn't worth the paper on which it was printed. When you get right down to it, very little of it has been adhered to, and you're right about making up the rules as we go. And as so often is the case, whenever we get, you know, whenever we meet news that shakes up the way things have been, it's easy to have that want to push back and say, how silly is that? I don't want that. I'm talking specifically about seven-inning doubleheaders right now because that was my reaction to it yesterday. One day later, take a deep breath. If that's what they have to do to get this in and preserve pitching staffs, then that's what they have to do. I don't love it, but I don't have to love it. There's not much to love about this calendar year, so you try and find whatever positives you can out of it. All of the records that were going to be established this year, records meaning, you know, who led the league and whatever, all that stuff doesn't matter anyway because it's only a 60-game season. So what's one more thing that's changing the way the game has been played forever going to do to I don't think it's going to hurt it at all. If that's what they feel they have to do, then that's what they got to do. And Jed Hoyer is a good guy to talk to about all of these things. The Cubs general manager will join us during the 4 o'clock hour today.
Yeah, he'll be on at 4:30. Steve Stone is his leadoff hitter, who will be able to talk about Nick Madrigal, who the White Sox are bringing up. Rick Hahn gets a lot of credit for signing players early, right? He signed Luis Robert early. There was no worry about service time manipulation. They signed Tim Anderson to a great contract. They signed Yoan Moncada to a contract extension early. Eloy has been signed. Like the White Sox, for the most part, have signed their young core early, bought out some arbitration years, and it got an extra year or two on the back end into their prime. That has been a great success, arguably the greatest success, frankly, of Rick Hahn's tenure as general manager. And that's not backhanded. Like, that is significant. The Cubs were not able to do it with any of their guys, right? They were not able to do that with...
Yeah, I don't think there's anything backhanded about what you said. I think that absolutely is a feather in his cap. He's been aggressive, yet very, very responsible. And if these players are two-thirds of what their expectation levels are, then those are going to be team-friendly contracts. I think he's to be applauded for all of his getting all of his paperwork done. You don't have to worry about, at least from a positional standpoint, you don't have a whole lot of concerns for a long time with this baseball team. You're in a pretty good position for some time to come if everybody plays close to what they're expected to and has good health.
Yeah, it's a great thing to do. It helps, and especially for a team like the White Sox that are not as high of revenue generators as the Cubs, Yankees, Red Sox, Dodgers, Cardinals, etc. Anytime you can make a bet on a young guy like a Yoan Moncada or a Luis Robert, who the chances of them busting out and being bad and you not wanting them past their arbitration years is so slim and none, that's going to be a team-friendly deal. But it shows, even though that has been what I think Lawrence Holmes calls it, Rick Hahn's superpower, is getting those contracts done early, which is a good way of framing it considering how many other teams have had problems with it. You get a guy like Nick Madrigal who isn't interested in giving up money and signing early or giving up years into his prime or anything like that. And then they're just like every other team in baseball, and they're playing the service time manipulation game.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they're not impervious from it, even though they're going to say, hey, we're trying to win now, the window is open, and all of that. They're still going to do the same thing to Nick Madrigal that the Cubs did to Chris Bryant if they can't sign the guy early.
Yeah, Nick Madrigal will be wearing jersey number one for the White Sox tonight when we see them go to work against, how do you pronounce this kid's name, Chris Bubic? Is that Bubic or Bubic? Do you know?
I don't.
Mr. Kansas City? No?
No.
Danny, can you help me on
this kid?
This
guy was there well after I left.
Wish I could. I just
Chris Bubic, B-U-B-I-C?
I assume Bubic, if there's no K.
I don't like the Royals. I don't like them.
Yeah, I have no idea. And to the texter saying that the Cubs signed Rizzo or they signed Hendricks, true. I'm not saying they never signed any player to a contract extension. I'm talking about, you know, so that they didn't have to worry about service time manipulation on the front end. Rick Hahn has had a much better track record than that, right? They signed Rizzo to a contract extension. They signed Hendricks to an extension. But Hahn has gotten some of those deals done before guys have even made it to the big leagues. So, yeah. Right, Luis Robert was here on opening day. There was no concern about seven being more than six with him. They signed him for, I think, 8 years. So Rick Hahn's just been very good at that, and Theo and company have not been able to get that done as often on the north side. And so it sucks. It's a terrible rule. I think it's in the best case, the best interest of both the owners and the players to close that loophole. You want your young stars to be with the big league club as soon as possible when they are ready. That's good for the growth of the game. So to me, when they do the next collective bargaining agreement, that should be a loophole that's closed so that no side feels like they need to keep guys away from the big leagues even when they're clearly ready.
Yeah, and I think, you know, at least in the case of the Cubs executives, they've been pretty honest in terms of admitting they don't think it's fair to the players as well. So I think everybody would love to see this thing become a thing of the past, and I think that's probably what's going to happen in the near future, which would be good.
Yeah, I hope so. And to your point about just like what we've been watching and the changes and like the 7-inning doubleheader, I don't know. And maybe it's I do think I'm pretty open-minded to change, tinkering with rules, trying things, you know, for the most part. None of it's bothered me. Like, some of it's weird and you can make fun of cardboard cutouts or whatever, but it's so much better than not having sports that the 3-batter minimum rule, the runner starting on second base, 7-inning mm-hmm. doubleheaders, DH in the National League. I'm watching the NBA last night, and they have like virtual hologram-style fans within the camera shot. Yeah. And it's really weird and clearly fake, but I'm watching LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard and Anthony Davis. I'm not really focusing, you know? So, like, those little things that they're doing, piping in crowd noise or whatever, like, it's good sports radio fodder, and I get why they're spending their time thinking about those things. But, man, I'm just glad that the sports are back. I don't care that it's not exactly what it was like 1, 2, 3 years ago.
Didn't have to be. We appreciate things more once they're taken away from us. And when you go 4-plus months without live sports, it looks very good on many levels. And in the case of anybody who watched the White Sox and Indians wrap up that series on Wednesday night, you saw one of the better pitching duels you'll see all baseball season between Zach Plesac of the Indians and Lucas Giolito and the White Sox bullpen, highlighted by Aaron Bummer. And we'll talk with Stoney about that today as well, because it was an absolute joy to watch. And we got to find out how you've mentioned it a couple of times now, the cardboard cutouts. I will sponsor these. Whatever it costs to get our likenesses, all of the afternoon show cast members, we need to get our cardboard cutouts to both sides of town that would be willing to deploy them in the ballpark, provided we get camera time, provided it's within the angle of a shot. I don't want to wait. We got to get us on TV. How do we go about doing
this? Well, I think so the White Sox originally said they were doing it for White Sox charities for the opening series. I don't know if they've announced any plans to keep them beyond
that. They
have
to keep going. They've got to do whatever they can to produce revenue. I would think all teams would be interested in doing this all year. If you have the chance to, whatever you can get to make the cash register ring, you do it right now.
I feel you, especially because the White Sox sold out so quickly, but I wonder if they sold out because it was for charity for the opening series. I don't think that this is making the cash register ring. I don't think they're pocketing any of it. And then the Cubs have just hung out the not interested sign. They're like, no, we're not. This is Wrigley Field. They don't like to make changes to Wrigley. You know, I mean, they've made plenty of changes to Wrigley. But Crane Kenny, if you listen to him when he's on with Mully and Haw, he talks about how any change they make to Wrigley is, like, very considered, and they try to take all of the tradition into account and all of that. Now, if you look at the outfield right now,
right,
and you see video boards and advertising everywhere. Yeah, sure. But the Cubs have expressed no interest in the cardboard cutouts, and the White Sox, I don't think, Tanny, correct me if I'm wrong, they have any plans beyond the opening homestand? Okay. Yeah, I don't think that there's been any announcement for that.
Okay, well, let's investigate this, and let's get in on it, if possible. I think we should be visible in cardboard cutout form.
Yeah, it'd be great. It would be great. I was looking into the possibility of, you know, getting Manny Machado in a Cubs hat onto a cardboard cutout at the Sox game. But, they filled up so quickly. There was so much demand that it all worked out. So I look at it like it – my point overall was just I have been impressed with the quality of play. And I didn't really know what quality of play we were going to get. But I feel like we've watched pretty high-level baseball. We watched really high-level basketball last night, if you watched it. I've been very impressed. And maybe you feel like, Parkins, what the hell are you talking about? These are professional athletes, of course. I don't know. Like I was expecting the weirdness to seep into the quality of play and the rust to seep into the quality of play. I feel like I've watched very high-level sports since they've come back.
I agree with you, and I was listening to Mark DeRosa on MLB Network this morning talk about the difficulty of just flipping that switch and going to 100 miles an hour right out of the chute, and how he's talking about, in this case, he was talking about how difficult it is for anybody like the Phillies, teams that have been parked because of the COVID-19 interruption, and how hard it is to jump back in the batter's box 6-7 days later and face 97-98 mile an hour heat. That's got to be the same just starting a season. And the Cubs offense has been pretty damn good, as you know, and the White Sox ran into really good pitching both series, more so against the Indians, but their offense finally got going the other night a little bit. It took 9 innings before they put 4 on the board. But, yeah, the quality of play has been very, very good, and it has been nice to get mad about things that aren't really that important. And it's good to see more people gaining that perspective, and I like to think that I've had it for some time now because I'm an older dude. And, you know, when your kids grow up and you see them, you know, finish the toughest years and start their own lives, you finally take a breath and your perspective increases even more, and you realize the things that upset you, like with anything to do with entertainment, whether it's sports or the film or music industries, how silly those things are. And I'm hearing more people, younger people, express that right now, and it's heartening that we've had to go through. I mean, it's unfortunate we've had to go through something as tragic as a global pandemic to arrive at this level of perspective, but if that's what it takes, that's where we are. And I think there's been an appreciation factor from anybody who has sat down to watch it, and yes, the quality of play has been better than expected. And Cubs starting pitching, with the exception of Hendricks the other night, has been very, very good, and it's going to have to be because their bullpen is disastrous.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's exactly where I thought you were going. Maybe the Cubs bullpen has been the exception to the high quality of play because they're walking almost 1 out of every 5. Or no, I think it is 1 out of every 5 batters they face. So that's not great. Overall, though, yes, a very, very good quality of play. And I'm looking forward to it. In terms of sports anger, I do wonder how angry some White Sox fans are about the service time manipulation around Nick Madrigal. We can continue to talk about that. There's gambling news here in Illinois that could completely change the landscape. Joe Ostrowski going to join us in about an hour, then Steve Stone at 4, Jed Hoyer at 4:30. We're very busy on a Friday. Thanks for hanging out with the Mob on the Score.
McNeil and Parkins flashback. Flashback.
Nick Madrigal hopefully is going to be a big part of the White Sox future and rebuild. I talked to an AL scout. He said the Madrigal-Pedroia comp isn't just a lazy, short, white middle infielder comp. I like the pick a lot.
Reminds me a lot of Dustin Pedroia.
Short people, Mac.
Done persecuted against them.
I love them because I'm in the club.
Our friend there, the mayor of Munchkinland. John wants him gone.
There shouldn't be any prejudice towards short people when it comes to what they can do and what they can do in sport.
Oh, the White Sox probably got the best player in this draft at number 4. That was what everybody kept saying.
Stand up for the little people!
Well done, Chris Tannehill. A trip to yesteryear, Mac. Well, they drafted Nick Madrigal and short people rejoiced. Now he's here, getting ready to make his major league debut in this weekend's series against the Kansas City Royals.
Fourth pick overall in the 18 draft. They list him at 5'7". I have not stood like right across from him. I don't know if you had the occasion in Glendale, Arizona to look eye to eye to him, but does that sound about right to you? I mean, watching him play college baseball, he didn't look 5'7" to me. He looked he looked more like 5'5". He was little Freddie Patek, was a little middle infielder many years ago in the National League, primarily with the Padres. I think he finished his career with your Royals, too, if you don't mind me giving you the Royals. Since baseball can't be your game, I could at least give you your Royals, given your Kansas City-ness.
Yeah, he was on those teams in the 80s when he was, you know, legging them out on AstroTurf. I've had Freddie Patek on the show a few times. Pretty good storyteller.
Did you really? Freddie Patek, good old number two, I want to say. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's exactly right. It's fun to watch a little guy be successful in baseball.
Be in baseball. I mean, you know, you can be in hockey. You know, one of my favorite White Sox players of all time was a guy who was shorter than I am, and that's Ray Durham, second baseman. I loved little Ray. He had power, too, for a shorter guy. He was fairly muscular, but he couldn't have been more than 5'6", 5'7".
Yeah, I don't know how tall Ray Durham was. I would have guessed taller than 5'6" or 5'7", honestly.
No, I was in an elevator with him. I'm happy for you, Mac.
It's very exciting.
Jill, my first wife, wife at the time, Will Perdue, and Ray and I were in an elevator together in Seattle, and I actually I was just a smidge taller than he is. I felt like Shaquille McNeil.
He's listed as 5'8", Ray Durham. I don't know if that's
listed
changed over
5'8",
the years.
Yeah, see? And I was listed at 5'9", in 0-0.
Well, there you go. So you did. You towered over Ray Durham.
Yeah, I did. You hear Shaq was late for his show last night, by the way?
Was he?
Yeah. He got in traffic problems.
Oh, for the pregame?
Yeah, for pre.
That's great. I did not watch pregame for the Hornets game.
And on this side, we expect to see Shaquille O'Neal.
Where is he?
Yo, man.
We only had 4 months to realize we were about to play.
Yeah. Not going to be late for that.
What kind of dummies late to work the first day? Like, we knew this was going to happen 2 months ago, and he stuck in traffic.
Well, by the way, we got a 5 o'clock pregame show. It's going to be 90 minutes worth, so get in there. So Shaq will be along.
Hopefully. Come on, man. You cannot be late today.
You can't make this up.
You can't.
I cannot make this up.
5 o'clock in the afternoon and you're running late. It's like
that's awesome.
Say to Harry Tynowitz, that 12:30 meeting, that 12:30 start time will try anybody's patience.
It's tough. It's tough to roll out of bed in time for the 5 o'clock start to this show. But in fairness, they are on until like 1-2 in the morning after they do the hour long post game for the West Coast game of the doubleheader. So, you know, Shaq's just pacing himself for the NBA restart. But I'm seeing Herb Lawrence, who is half of the Locked On Sox podcast with our
just the good half.
Yeah, of course, with Chris Tannehill, and he's very upset about what they did to Nick Madrigal, and I get it, and maybe I just have an immunity to it or something. I'm numb to it because it's the rule. It's a bad rule. Everyone acknowledges it's a bad rule, and when teams can take advantage of it, they do. So it doesn't really make them special in any way. So what has you so upset about this, Herb?
Well, it's dumb initially, all over. I know the players agreed to it a long time ago. Whatever, but in a regular year, like when they were going to do with Eloy before he signed, they were going to send him back down to work on his defense. And yeah, it needs help, but he was one of the best 25 players on that team. So Eloy, it kind of makes sense because if he reaches his ceiling and he's a free agent after 6 years, it's going to be a prohibitive number for the White Sox to sign him back. So that makes sense. Chris Bryant was same thing. I don't like it, but I understand why they did it. In a regular year, I still hate it, but it's understandable to send him down in the minors to get a little seasoning. This team sent him to Schaumburg and said that a week in Schaumburg made this some bitch MLB ready. How? These people are just dishonest. I know they can't say it 100%. They can't, like, hey, we got to sit him down because we want this extra year. But that's why they're doing it. And they had to let us suffer through that Leary Garcia first game, where there was a couple plays where a minor league gold glover like Nick Madrigal would have easily made those double plays, and maybe we could have won that first game versus the Minnesota Twins. Sat him down for 10% of the season. 10% of a season where you're thinking about competing, and for what? A guy that at the end of this contract, at the end of this 6 or 7 years, won't be a prohibitive contract because middle infielders, especially a slap-hitting guy like him, won't break the bank. So it makes no sense on any level. No level does this make sense.
You make the point very well. I can't wait for them to try to spin it. And I assume I haven't since the news came out and missed it. But, like, did they say he's going to Schaumburg to work on his defense? Like what cover story did they give, or have they even offered one on Nick Madrigal? Because clearly you're right. There is – and by the way, it was weak with Chris Bryant at the time. But there's like two or three things they can say. Like, oh, he's got to work on off speed – like recognizing the breaking ball. He's got to work on his defense. Like what coded language did they give for Nick Madrigal?
Danny, what I remember, and you guys back in the studio help me out if this is not right. But what I remember is them trying to justify it by relating it to the Mazzara illness / injury and them having to use roster spots there.
That's basically what it was. That was the starting point of it. But then Rickon quickly went on to say how they don't want to force the hand and have someone called up just because of an injury at the big league level. But then he went on to say how Leury Garcia helps them more, from a tactical standpoint. Like, you know, we know Rick Renteria loves his lefty-righty. So I don't know if there was a thing there with Han versus Renteria. If Renteria said, yeah, I don't know if I can use this guy right out of the chute like you want me to. So I don't know what happened there, but it seemed like they were trying to sell that Leury Garcia playing second base makes them a better baseball team than Nick Madrigal.
And well, he helped in the second game of the season.
Yes,
as much as he heard in the first one. Do you share Herb's anger about this, Tanny?
I don't know if I'll ever share the anger about it, but I'm certainly going to try to keep him lathered up until we record the podcast tonight.
Okay.
I'm an impartial observer to Herb's anger. But, no, I mean, we have to hold them to the standard that they set. That's why I was willing to give them a little bit more leeway, because they did right by Eloy and they did right by Luis Robert. But, you know, let's not get it twisted. Like, those contracts benefit them more so than the player. You know, it's nice to have the money early on in your career if you're a player, but it also benefits the organization to lock them in early. And I'm wondering, I would love to do a little sleuthing, and rather than just be over the top mad about it, I'd love to know what happened. Did they try to maybe approach him with a deal, and it wasn't what he expected because of the, quote, financial uncertainties of their business? Was that not even on the table for them because of COVID and how the finances are looking going forward? There's a lot going on here. Was it a Rick Renteria thing? So there's a lot of angles other than Sox being cheap, because, you know, you would hope that a 60-game season, they would realize that having every best man in every possible roster spot would be ideal, and you can't go about it any other way. So I'd love to know what the root of all this is, but certainly it appears – you know, the timing is very curious on this, that they held him down strictly to get the extra year of service time, which I get. It's a bad rule. It's dumb. But in a year like this, I don't like the way that they handled it.
Yeah, I think, though, that you can make the argument that in a year like this is the year you actually should do it, because it's not like you are favorites. It's not like you need to contend this year for your window. And it's 6 games that gets you an extra year of service time, and every dollar saved in the future helps an organization like the White Sox. And in a year where the playoffs are expanded anyway, like, is Nick Madrigal for 6 games going to be the thing that keeps you out of the crapshoot that is the extended playoffs? I think I could actually say that from the White Sox standpoint, if this was next year or the year after and you're playing 162 and you actually are, you know, expected to contend from Jump Street, then that's when it would be more egregious than in a year like this that's a total crapshoot anyway.
Well, I know it's only a game difference, but if they would have started, you know, 3-3. We probably wouldn't be talking about this, but the fact that they got off to such a slow start and they faced the good pitchers that they faced in Cleveland, you would think that a contact hitter would have helped them immensely in any of those games that they lost. So they didn't do themselves any favors by coming out of the gate slow. I think if they would have been 500 or above, we'd be like, okay, yeah, fine, sure, whatever, and then quickly moved on. But I genuinely believe that he would have helped them this past week.
Some of our favorite type of analysis, hockey guy analysis, is back. You'll hear it next on The Score.
This very unique Chicago sports situation. That's right, due to this year's unique situation.
The very unique Chicago sports situation that we have been we've kind of been previewing the previews in a weird way. Like, how would you describe the McNeil and Parkin Show breakdown of the 12-5 matchup between Edmonton and Chicago, Matt?
Non-existent. We haven't broken it down. We've mocked it. We got a kick out of how excited so many – Mitch Rosen in particular, our intrepid program director, when word broke, what was it, 6 weeks ago now – that this became a reality. It was a long time ago because it was so far down the road.
Yeah, 6-7 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, it was. And we both got a kick out of it that there was such an urgency on Mitch's part. And frankly, some of our compadres at the radio station were quick to jump on a sports story because, okay, we got something. We had some meat. We had a lot of fun of them. Mully and Haw had back-to-back guests previewing the series on a Friday morning, and we had some fun laughing about that. You know,
I'd get a kick out of it.
We did get a kick out of it, yeah. God, I miss him. He was so good. But, yeah, so we've joked about it, but Bernsie had Kevin Weeks on today. Kevin played netminder. You know, I know you like Terry Bors. Danny Parkins always have been concerned first and foremost about netminding. He played in the NHL for 15 years, a handful of teams, the Devils, the Panthers, the Rangers, and he's a really good analyst on NHL Network. And there were a couple of things that came up in the conversation that aren't necessarily related to hockey. We have fun with malaprops on the show.
Yeah.
And this is a cliche in American pop culture that it was started in the mid 50s. It's become a part of our lingo in this country because of a game show that aired only 4 years on CBS called the $64,000 question. You probably were aware. You're aware of the cliche. Well, that's the $64,000 question. The
question, of course,
everybody has to have the answer to. That originated from a television show that wasn't very successful. But I have heard the number on what the value is bastardized a few different times. And Dan Plesac did it the funniest, although I can't remember if he called it a $64 question or if he called it a $640 question. But about
popular $16,444 question.
Yes. 10 years or so ago, Sack tells me, you know, dangerous, that's really the $640 question. Well, Kevin Weeks had a different figure he wanted to put on the value. What type of value do you put on one of Bernsie's questions? I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about here.
We talked last time during the middle of quarantine about the difficulty in general that goalies would have in staying sharp, because obviously someone can go skate on their own and they can make sure that their conditioning is okay and they can cut and they can shoot, they can do what they want, but goalies need extra people around them to give them the looks that they need to stay sharp. Do you think goaltending in general is going to lag, or do you think they've had enough time to get back up to sharpness?
That is the maybe $1 billion, maybe $1.5 billion question, you know.
Oh. he's not quite sure where to put it. That's the $1 billion, maybe the $1.5 billion question.
That is the maybe $1 billion, maybe $1.5 billion question.
Is it any chance he's right? Like, has he actually quantified the value of that question? It's possible. I like it.
Yeah.
All right. What else do we get from Mr.
Hockey?
There's
another piece of math here because that he did when, you know, and he was a very good guest, and he assessed the the state of this series. He gives the Hawks a puncher's chance because he believes in superheroes. He said he learned to bet not ever to bet against superheroes, and the Blackhawks have a few of those. And I thought that's a very good way of looking at this series. Dan pointed out 15 of 16 experts. All picked Edmonton. Only one expert picked the Blackhawks in the series. But more math from Kevin Weeks from NHL Network on how long it's been since the Edmonton Oilers actually mattered in terms of a national landscape in the NHL.
Now, coming into this series, I've been asked numerous times, and I got to tell you, I really have a lot of respect for what Edmonton finally was able to do. And I say finally because it seems like it's been 800 years since they've been able to get it together and build a deep team, especially having all these great draft picks that they've had over
800 years. And makes the Cubs, 800.
Yeah, it makes the Cubs' World Series-less streak seem like it was nothing.
And see, I love it when people just, you know, ad-libbing and they just find something like that. That much is just pick it out of thin air. You know, it's not a nice round. It seems like it's been 100 years since the Oilers been good. I get that, you know.
It seems like it's been 800 years since they've been able to get it together and build a deep team.
He comes up with 800. It seems like it's been 800 years. Yeah. Who could forget that Edmonton Oilers team in the year 1220?
They were good. They had some netminding trouble, but other than that, they were very solid.
13th century Edmonton Oilers were one of the best dynasties in the history of sports.
A little slow on the blue line, but other than that, I think they were good stick handling back then. that's ridiculous. So that doesn't conclude necessarily, but that's in line with how this show has been previewing the 12-5 matchup. We're looking very much forward to watching the game and reacting to it, of course, on Monday's show. Joe Ostrowski will join us in half an hour to explain what the hell's going on with sports gambling in Illinois as it pertains to horse racing and otherwise. Steve Stone at 4 o'clock, Jet Hoyer at 4:30. But hey, the quarterbacks are speaking today, and Ryan Pace spoke. We'll go over some Bears stuff next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.